The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Sam Livingston, and I'll be your host for today's show. I'm happy for the opportunity to sub in for Mr. Stephen Fleury. As you know, during the Feast of Tabernacles, a lot of the shows are pre-recorded, or we do reruns. So this year, it's a little different. We're doing a lot more pre-recorded shows rather than playing reruns from years past. So this week, you've had, or you've heard from quite a few different hosts. I'm pre-recording this show a day in advance. Today is Wednesday. I've tried to keep it as up-to-date as I can. As you can see, if you're watching online, I'm recording this in my hotel room in Rapid City, South Dakota. We'll even have a few comments on this state and just some of the things the governor has done here as regarding the COVID restrictions. On today's show, we'll talk a little bit about John Brennan, a brief update on some deep state news, President Trump's response to his bout with coronavirus, some comments on the impact of lockdowns and how many medical experts are responding to the lockdowns, saying exactly what we were saying right when they started 6-7 months ago. The cure is worse than the disease. These lockdowns are more harmful. And now the scientists are coming out and saying those same things. And then if there's time left, I'd like to conclude with just a brief study about having hope in this chaotic world. Like I said, there we'll cover a bit a bit of breaking news, I guess, about John Brennan. This is an article from Sean Davis. It's titled, Director of National Intelligence Declassifies Handwritten Notes from John Brennan. His 2016 CIA referral on Clinton campaign's collusion operation. Davis says here, top U.S. intelligence officials were so concerned heading into the 2016 election that the Russians were aware of and potentially manipulating Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's plans to smear Donald Trump as a Russian agent that they personally briefed President Barack Obama on the matter, newly declassified CIA documents show. CIA officials also requested that the FBI investigate Russian knowledge of the Clinton campaign's collusion smear operation. The reason this is such a big deal is, as you know, Barack Obama, John Brennan, all of them said, well, we didn't know anything about this in 2016. We didn't know anything about Steele. In the spring and summer of 2016. And Obama certainly repeated time and time again, I don't intervene in that stuff. I don't interfere. I don't give orders like that to the FBI or to the CIA, as Mr. Gerald Fleury has covered in some recent articles. Again, it's just another lie, another bogus statement from the former president. Continuing on here from Sean Davis, he says, according to the declassified notes, Brennan and the U.S. intelligence community knew months prior to the 2016 election that the collusion smear was the result of a campaign operation hatched by the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. And again, these notes, these are handwritten notes that have been declassified of or from John Brennan. These are his notes. And just looking at the PDF of these documents, I'm still shocked at how much of it is redacted. Knowing what we know now, President Trump has said he's given the all clear to declassify everything. I know there's obviously a lot of things that need to remain classified, but at this stage in the game, knowing what we know, there's no reason for 3/4 of those handwritten notes to be declassified, especially, or to continue to be redacted, especially when it adds vital context that we need. This is just a snippet from Brennan's handwritten notes, and this is in a meeting that he had with Barack Obama. It says, we're getting additional insight into Russian activities from Redacted. Cite alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on 26th of July of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by the Russian security services. This is in July 2016. And if that date, what he says there is July 26th, you get that counterintelligence investigation opened on July 31st, so they say. Obviously, Durham and Barr looking into that and say that's just the Obama administration's official date, the date that they go by. But they were cooking this up far in advance of that. And here is handwritten notes from John Brennan in a conversation he had with Barack Obama telling him they're cooking something up. We need to be prepared for it. And it is, how are we going to use it? How are we going to use this dirt? It's not even dirt. It's just will worship. They pulled it out of a hat. They got Christopher Steele to work up this project. He spoke to someone that we now know was a Russian agent, or was at least investigated for being a Russian agent 10 years ago. It was all barroom talk. Steele interpreted those things the way he wanted to. Continuing on from, this is the memo that the DNI wrote alongside the declassification of Brennan's notes. It says, per FBI verbal request, CIA provides the below examples of information the Crossfire Hurricane Fusion Cell has gleaned today. Sorry, that's still from Brennan. So there is the Crossfire Hurricane Fusion Cell. And what exactly is that? Sean Davis goes on to talk about how this wasn't just an FBI concoction. This wasn't just, pulled out of Comey's brain. This was the deep state. These were the intelligence agencies colluding together, and Russia barely plays a part in it. It's the Obama administration colluding with the Clinton campaign and the FBI and the CIA and weaponizing America's intelligence agencies to smear the president, and more than just a smear, to take him out. It was a coup attempt. There's this fusion cell of Crossfire Hurricane. Continuing on from Brennan's notes, an exchange with Redacted discussing U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's approval of a plan concerning U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump and Russian hackers hampering U.S. elections as a means of distracting the public from her use of a private email server. And I've been following this closely for years now, and I read something like that and I sit here and I just wonder, you're almost sick of hearing it. Where are the indictments? How come nobody's getting locked up for this? We saw what members of the Trump campaign were imprisoned over. I mean, this, what they did pales in comparison, even if it was if they did perjure themselves. What we're talking about here is this went up to Hillary Clinton's office. She approved of this plan to distract from the DNC hack. John Brennan knew, Jim Comey knew, Barack Obama knew, they all knew in the summer of 2016. This is a quote from Mr. Gerald Fleury's article in the November-December 2020 Philadelphia Trumpet titled Treason in America and Britain. He says, when you trace all the strands back to their source, you find President Obama was using John Brennan to orchestrate a treasonous plot against Donald Trump. In America, the plot involved the CIA, the NSA, and the FBI. Now, that article was written before these notes were declassified on October 6th. That article was already prepared well in advance of that. And then a few days, I think this Trumpet, the November-December Trumpet, that came out just a week or two ago. The articles would have been written maybe a little bit further back. And then here we have this news headline that confirms exactly what Mr. Gerald Flaherty was saying. And a lot of this has to do with why the radical left hates Donald Trump and hates what he is doing. He is exposing them. He's exposing that coup attempt. And we can see this sense of hate. We can see the radical media. We see the Obama administration, those former officials. They're guided by one doctrine, and that is oppose Donald Trump at all costs. They cannot concede even a little bit. They can't agree on anything. Anything President Trump does, even if it's what they want, they'll find a way to explain why it's wrong and why he's evil for doing it. That was perfectly on display. Well, it's been on display the last 4 years, but the last 7 days when President Trump contracted coronavirus, there was nothing he could do right in the eyes of the mainstream media and the radical left. I'd like to talk a fair bit about President Trump's episode with coronavirus. I wanted to start this segment, though, by reading from an article that Mr. Brad McDonald wrote back in May of 2020. It's titled, "Donald Trump is the Greatest World Leader Since Churchill." And he starts this article talking about Winston Churchill's leadership during World War II. And we know a lot about that history. You've heard a lot about it on this show. Mr. Churchill did not want to sit in the bunker. He wanted to be out there. He wanted to see the Blitz firsthand. He was in the trenches in World War I. He asked to go out there. He didn't have to do that. Mr. McDonald writes, "Ultimately, leadership isn't about IQ or eloquence. It isn't about being great at managing a committee or leading like-minded people. It's not being the loudest or toughest guy in the room or the most creative, talented, or sophisticated. Leadership is being able to see what others do not see, then helping others see what you see. It's about having a clearly defined set of values and principles and defending them at any cost. Leadership takes all the facts, evidence, and expert opinions, rationally distills and processes them, and makes informed, balanced, lawful, and sound decisions that benefit the majority. Leadership is about recognizing untruths, threats, and disreputable figures and policies. More than that, great leaders expose and confront lies, deceit, and corruption, even when it means choking in your own blood upon the ground. Leadership is about consistent, sacrificial service to a right and noble cause. Winston Churchill, one of history's greatest leaders, embodied these characteristics. And so does United States President Donald Trump." In a world where admiring Donald Trump is widely considered a cardinal sin, such a statement sounds ridiculous. Some will accuse me of president worship, but those who read to the end will see that this article is ultimately not about Donald Trump. Think about it. Throughout the coronavirus crisis, while most leaders timidly deferred to the experts, activists, scientists brandishing flawed models, and social influencers, the media, America's president bravely critiqued and questioned. Mr. Trump hasn't handled the crisis perfectly, but his initial instincts proved correct. He hasn't been afraid to say no to the experts. Thanks almost solely to its president, America was one of the slowest to enter lockdown and is one of the fastest to come out. Now, Mr. Falk covered a little bit of Trump's coronavirus and the media's response to it on Monday's show. There was a moment of civility where some of President Trump's biggest enemies just wished him well, wished that he would recover, and there were a lot of people that were hoping he would die. Now the president has recovered, as you've probably heard. This dominated the news the last 7 days. He's back at the White House. He's out of Walter Reed Medical Center and is in quarantine at the White House. He says he still wants to attend the debate with Joe Biden on October 15th. And I think when you look at his episode with coronavirus, obviously it can go either way. There are a lot of people where this virus really preys on their weaknesses. And this was such a unique week because we followed, or we were getting minute-to-minute updates on the president's oxygen levels, pretty much. I just wonder, would he have even noticed that he had it had he not been tested every day like he is? Then finally, on October 5th, when President Trump left Walter Reed Medical Center, he tweeted the tweet that I think we've all been waiting for since March and April, June, July, August, the 6 months of this madness that our countries have been subjected to. The most powerful leader in the world issued this tweet on October 5th. "I will be leaving the great Walter Reed Medical Center today at 6:30 p.m. feeling really good. Do not be afraid of COVID. Do not let it dominate your life. We have developed under the Trump administration," and then he goes on to talk about the advances in drugs and therapeutics. He concludes the tweet with, "I feel better than I did 20 years ago." Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life is the message from the President of the United States. He posted two videos saying the same thing just before he left the hospital. And he's saying, stop living in fear. You take this seriously, just like you would the flu. You wash your hands. You quarantine when you have symptoms. But do not ruin your life and don't ruin your country because of this. And that is leadership. He's standing up to those hordes of media that want you to live in fear. I'll play a clip from Governor Cuomo. And his response to that tweet was, be afraid. Continue to live in fear. A message like that, though, it's uplifting. It's positive. It inspires people. It's filled with hope. It's a wartime message. We can get through this. Don't let it dominate your life. Don't cower in fear. And so many people are scared of this, and it's ruining our countries. We won't have countries left if we continue to be this scared. And I always wonder, every time President Trump says something and you see the media reaction, I always wonder, well, what would they do if Barack Obama said that? Think of all the headlines. Obama, hope in dark times. Hope. It would be so Churchillian how they would report on a message like this. Do you think Barack Obama, you know, coming in after that recession would say, lock it down? Oh, well, we know what he did. We saw swine flu. There was no, the idea of a lockdown did not exist in any human being's brain anywhere on the earth. Why do they hate this message? They hate President Trump. Here's a montage that Gravian put together. This is the media responding to President Trump's tweet. The tweet when he said, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life.
President Trump wrote on Twitter, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. Almost 210,000 Americans are dead.
Speaking of outrageous, this outrageous tweet.
Oh my goodness, Nicole. When I saw that, Trump, I mean, I literally was overwhelmed.
And now we see this tweet, which is heartless. It is cruel.
Jake, this is so disrespectful. I'm not even sure I can speak about this. It's incredibly incredibly disrespectful. What does that mean? Don't be afraid of it. I mean, first of all, it's a contagious disease that kills people. There's nowhere to even begin. It's gross.
It's such a distressing moment.
It's just so horrible, so destructive to say I feel better than I have in 20 years.
That he's saying this is so disrespectful.
The president says it's no big deal. I mean, it's outrageous.
It is insulting to the people who have lost loved ones. It is insulting to every American who wears a mask. I mean, it's disgraceful, Wolf. It's absurd.
Don't tell your supporters, don't be afraid of COVID. Everyone should be afraid of COVID.
It's okay to be afraid of COVID, and it's okay that it's dominating your life because it has dominated your life.
That last one from Jake Tapper. It's okay that it has dominated your life, or that it dominates your life because it has dominated your life. Well, who's doing that? This is all they will talk about. You can see it on the clip if you watch the stream. It's hard to even watch the news because they've got 40 or 50 different stats plastered along the side of the screen, and then the speaker is just a little square box in the top left. All of the coronavirus stats. Be afraid. Cower in fear. Hundreds of thousands of people have died from this disease, totally taken out of context, the broader context, as we'll cover in just a little bit. While he was in the hospital, President Trump, he left the hospital in a secure SUV to drive past his supporters, totally enclosed. He had hundreds of people waiting for him outside the hospital. And he wanted to do that because he wanted to assure them that he was okay. He wanted to convey confidence. He wanted to convey hope and positivity. He did not want to hide in the bunker. And he had every reason to. We don't know where Joe Biden was for 6 weeks this summer. I often wonder, well, how often do they get tested? President Trump gets tested every single day. Everyone that walks into that White House gets tested. How many times how often is Nancy Pelosi tested? How many of them maybe got it and just said, we cannot report that? I'm just speculating there. I don't know. But would you be surprised? Plenty of people are immune to it, so there's any sort of thing could happen there. But he wanted to go out and show his supporters, I'm still here. Again, imagine if that was Barack Obama. Imagine the applause. Imagine the parade. President Trump, when he returned to the White House, he stepped out on to the White House balcony. I think the nearest reporter was over 100 feet away. That balcony, it's two or three stories up. He's outside, and he takes off his mask as he walks out there. And this is the supreme evil. I was going to play this clip. This is from John Berman on CNN. And he's talking to the panel, and his producers start to play the B-roll footage of President Trump walking out onto the balcony, taking off his mask, and Berman says to his producers, take it off, referring to the clip. Please don't even put that clip on the screen. Please take it off, because that clip is going to kill people. If somebody sees the president taking off the mask, they'll think they don't have to wear the mask, and that's going to kill people. Never mind he's outside. Never mind he's 100 feet away from a human being when we're supposed to be 6 feet away for social distancing. And Josh Berman, in that news clip, he's in a TV studio. He's not from his office or his hotel room like I am, and he, I guarantee you, is closer to a human being than 100 feet, and he doesn't have a mask. No one on that panel of five people is wearing a mask. Well, that's killing people. What sort of example are they setting? Mr. Fleury talked a lot about that last week, the whited sepulchers. And on the same thing, in the States, I can watch Fox News a lot, and this Biden commercial came on Fox News. I wasn't expecting that. And it's dozens of clips of Joe Biden wearing the mask, making sure everybody sees him with the mask. But then I thought, well, at this time, you'd think the producers of that commercial would be ultra careful to make sure Biden has a mask in every clip. And there must have been 10, 12, maybe 15, you know, it's these quick shots of him hugging people without a mask, shaking people's hands without a mask, standing in a group of people talking very closely grouped together without a mask. Is that commercial going to kill people? MSNBC called the unmasking moment a Mussolini moment. CNN said it looked like something out of North Korea. The videographer for BBC and NBC, he put together that video of Trump side by side with Adolf Hitler, as if no other world leader has ever stepped out onto the balcony to wave to their supporters, to convey confidence. Here's that clip from MSNBC.
This is a Mussolini moment. Donald Trump, who looks like he has makeup on, which means somebody had to get close enough to make up his face with his favorite orange patina. He's standing there as if he is, you know, a member of the old Russian Tsar family.
I just laugh at this stage. I mean, this is laughable. They're picking on him for wearing makeup. How many of them get on set for their morning newscast and don't get their makeup? I don't know. I obviously don't wear any for this show. I don't know what the procedure is there. But I just find it so hard to believe all of these things that they criticize the president for that they actually do themselves. And we've seen it. We've seen dozens of leaders break the rules that they get up, that they stand up and force everyone else to abide by. Continuing on from Mr. McDonald's article, Donald Trump is the greatest world leader since Churchill. He says, leadership means standing for principle and truth, even against massive opposition, and no matter the consequences. Think about Mr. Trump's willingness to defend traditional America, the Constitution, and the rule of law, and American values against violent attacks by the radical left. He understands the radical left better than most people, even most conservatives. He sees truth and realities others simply do not. And where many tolerate lies and injustices and shy away from confrontation, America's president rolls up his sleeves and clenches his fist. He's the only top leader in America willing to attack and expose the radical left. I'll skip quite a bit of this article, but Mr. McDonald contrasts this episode to what Boris Johnson did in the United Kingdom. Now, he got pretty knocked out from coronavirus, and he was in the hospital. I don't think he had a ventilator. I think he was on oxygen for quite a long time. He recovered, thankfully. But after that, he disappeared. In the United Kingdom, we don't hear from Boris Johnson that often. He's a different person. And President Trump, all through that sickness, he's posting tweets. He's posting videos, and you knew as soon as he got better, there were about 40 tweets that popped into his timeline all about getting out and voting for this person in this district, and there's just energy there, like Mr. Fleury has talked about. There's some urgency there, and I'll talk about this more in a few minutes, and this is not saying that President Trump is the solution to our problems, but look at the leadership crisis in our countries. And here is someone that's not afraid to stand up for his principles. It's not afraid to disagree with the experts because he has to take into consideration all of these other things. Dr. Fauci does not walk into his office and say, I'm really worried about the economy. President Trump has to take all of these variables and he has to weigh those and he has to make a decision. And his message is, don't be afraid. Do not let this dominate your lives. He says dominate. It should be on your mind. You should try to avoid this sickness. You should not be irresponsible. But where is that line drawn? Is it really necessary to wear a hazmat suit through the airport? Is it really necessary to wear a little dish rag over your face on an 8.5-hour flight? Is it necessary to live in fear and to lock yourselves in your homes? Mr. McDonald says, President Trump doesn't cower in fear. He hasn't quit. He remains remarkably effective and productive. This is despite all of the attacks that he gets from the radical left, from the Democrat, his Democratic opposition. He remains remarkably effective and productive, even as his enemies attack with astonishing passion and hatred. And then yesterday, Mr. Fleury sent me this email. This was a Biden poll, a presidential poll, and it has Joe Biden up 16 points in this poll. He had a town hall, Joe Biden, the other night. This was on MSNBC. And apparently this was a town hall filled with undecided voters. So Joe Biden had to convince them. He had to win them over. And Washington Free Beacon did a pretty generic fact check on these undecided voters and found clips of them appearing on MSNBC just a couple weeks ago of these same people that were labeled undecided voters saying 2 weeks ago on MSNBC that they're voting for Joe Biden. Not a difficult fact check to do. There's just so many lies. These are undecided voters, but they appeared on our network 2 weeks ago saying that they're voting for Joe Biden. Nevertheless, put them out there. Tell the American public that these are undecided voters. It's just a little lie. As long as the ends justify the means, lying is okay if it means it gets us where we need to go. Transitioning into some more content about the lockdowns. This was another tweet that President Trump posted. This was October 6th. I went to go see the tweet and there was a warning. Twitter put a warning. So the president's tweet was invisible and there was a warning that said, "This tweet violated the Twitter rules about spreading misleading and potentially harmful information related to COVID-19. However, Twitter has determined that it may be in the public's interest for the tweet to remain accessible." So I clicked view thinking, oh, there's going to be something. There's going to be some fake news in here because it violated Twitter's rules. I hope that what I see here isn't dangerous. I hope it doesn't, kill me. Like seeing that clip of President Trump take off his mask. Here is the president's tweet. "Flu season is coming up. Many people every year, sometimes over 100,000, and despite the vaccine, die from the flu. Are we going to close down our country? No. We have learned to live with it, just like we are learning to live with COVID. In most populations, it's far less lethal." And I went back and I read that again. I said, what is the misleading information here? 2017, 2018, I think it was 70 or 80,000 excess deaths from the flu. And what Twitter's going to say is, well, the statement was inaccurate and it's potentially harmful because you have to live in fear. What the president said there is not wrong. Nothing in that tweet is misleading. We have never closed down our country because of a bad flu season. The front page of the Daily Mail. This is October 6th. "World's top scientists rage against lockdown. It says life should be allowed to return to normal for all but the elderly and vulnerable, top scientists insisted yesterday. More than 4,000 doctors and medical experts signed a global declaration stating grave concerns about the response to coronavirus. I know in the United Kingdom, there are a lot of side effects of these lockdowns, especially in the hospital system. And people get sick from other things apart from coronavirus. The New York Post, also on October 6th, "Medical experts, lockdowns do more harm than good." This was written by some epidemiologists. They wrote, "Coming from both the left and right and around the world, we have devoted our careers to protecting people. Current lockdown policies are producing devastating effects on short and long-term public health. The results, to name a few, include worsening cardiovascular disease outcomes, fewer cancer screenings, and deteriorating mental health, leading to greater excess mortality in years to come, with the working class and younger members of society carrying the heaviest burden. keeping students out of school is a grave injustice. Keeping these measures in place until a vaccine is available will cause irreparable damage, with the underprivileged disproportionately harmed. They would say, listen to science. Listen to the scientists. Well, now the scientists are saying lockdowns are bad. That Daily Mail article quotes 4,000 or a survey or a petition of 4,000 doctors and medical experts saying the lockdowns are bad. And now it's just a matter of choose your expert. Choose the scientists you want to listen to. That's the decision making that President Trump has to contend with. Well, these 4,000 say lockdowns are bad and these 4,000 say they're good. Well, I'll consider both sides and then I'll consider the economy. I'll consider the campaign. I'll consider all the what's best for the American public. And he makes a decision. But it's getting more extreme. I think as you see President Trump, you know, back down from the lockdowns, back down from the 15 days to slow the spread, the radical left is just going to get more and more extreme because they have to invent rules to make sure that they appear righteous. They have to make rules to make sure that they can still criticize you for breaking them. This was a tweet from Gavin Newsom's office, the governor of California's office. This tweet says, going out to eat with members of your household this weekend? Don't forget to keep your mask on in between bites. Take that mask off, touch your face, remember, touch your cheek and close to your mouth, put your food in, and then while you chew, put the mask back over. In New York City, the Jews are keeping the feast the way that they keep it. And de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, and Governor Andrew Cuomo are pretty upset about this, and they're rounding them up. They're closing down this festival in New York City. Andrew, these are the leaders that were out there protesting with Black Lives Matter at the height of lockdown, violating the rules that they put in place. I don't have the clip with me, but it was de Blasio who said, well, the BLM movement, this transcends coronavirus. It's a greater public health crisis. It's more important. And I determined that I should be out there and be the face of this movement. Was that video killing people? Like they said about President Trump just taking off his mask. This is a clip from Andrew Cuomo. This was also in response to President Trump's tweet about not being afraid of the coronavirus, not letting it dominate your life.
From a public service point of view, don't be afraid of COVID. No, be afraid of COVID. It can kill you. Don't be cavalier. This is just more denial. This is where it started.
Don't be cavalier. Be afraid. Of course this is a disease that can kill you. There are thousands and millions of things that can kill you every day. You take precautions. I get in the car every day. I put my seatbelt on. That's a precaution. There is a big risk when I go out driving. When we were driving through South Dakota, there's a sign on the side of the road that says 96 road deaths in South Dakota this year. And I went and I checked, well, how many coronavirus deaths do they have? 200. 200 coronavirus deaths. 96 road deaths. So in this state, at least, coronavirus is a bit more lethal than driving. There are some states where there are more road deaths. I think in Australia, there are more road deaths than coronavirus deaths on average. Obviously, people aren't allowed to drive anymore, so the road deaths go down. But there's always a risk. And that's what a leader has to do, is assess the risk, weigh the risks. I was going to play a clip from the governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, and she's talking about how, you know, we didn't lock down. And we set an example to other states that these things do not work. And she didn't just ignore the problem. She took precautions. She didn't just sit there and say, I'm not going to pay any attention to it. And she's a strong advocate for President Trump. I think she campaigns for him. Here's the soundbite of her talking about the lockdowns. This is from 2 days ago.
Because while we were working together and we were preparing as a state, many other states were taking a very different approach. Some ordered their citizens to shelter in place, ordered their businesses to lock down, and ordered their churches to close. Some even sent nursing home patients who had the virus back to their facilities. The mainstream media told us that these steps had to be taken to slow down the spread of the virus. And day after day, night after night, they insisted that every single decision I was making was wrong, that I was foolish to trust my people. And I was even sillier to respect the oaths that I took. They told me I should shut my state down. Now, as all of you might imagine, these last 7 months at times can get a little bit lonely. But earlier this week, one very prominent reporter on the national level sent me a note that said, "Governor, if you hadn't stood against the lockdowns, we'd have no proof of just how useless they really have been."
One state, one governor that's willing to go against the flow, that's willing to take a stand. We've read that quote to you many times from the Saving America article, that President Trump takes a stand where others will not. I'd really encourage you to read that article from Mr. McDonald titled, "Donald Trump is the Greatest World Leader Since Churchill." And the conclusion of that article is the most important because it explains the spiritual aspect of this. This is not President Trump personally saving America. This is God saving America temporarily by the hand of Jeroboam. You can read that in Amos 7 and 2 Kings 14. God is very active in these news events. He's very active in what we are seeing play out on our screens today. Now, this isn't about praising President Trump. I mean, there are lessons in leadership. There is certainly great lessons of leadership there. But that isn't why we talk so much about President Trump. I'll just read the conclusion of Mr. McDonald's article. He says, "If you take anything from this article, it must be this. God is ultimately responsible for the leadership and accomplishments of America's president. God is using this man to save the nations of Israel one last time. After this has happened, Israel, or the United States and Britain, and the world will enter the time period known as the Great Tribulation. Donald Trump does not understand this, and he's too vain to admit it if he did. Don't make the same mistake. America's president is living daily proof of God and the phenomenal accuracy of Bible prophecy." Study this article. Study what Mr. Gerald Fleury has written about President Trump and Jeroboam. We cannot put our hope in a man. I know being over here, I run into quite a few people that, you know, they're not afraid to wear their MAGA hats out in public. And I mean, it is kind of a breath of fresh air to see that. But it, on one hand, it was really sad because that, you know, is all that they have. They wear that hat and they look at that man as though he's really going to make this nation great again permanently. Now, like this article explains, it's happening temporarily. God is giving people more time to repent, more time for this work to get this message out. But President Trump is not the solution. But what you're seeing right now, what you're seeing in the news, you're seeing Bible prophecy come to life every single day. You're seeing God's hand in current events. I wanted to end today's show going through some quotes from the Epistles of Peter booklet, A Living Hope. This was written by Mr. Gerald Fleury, and I got into this a couple weeks ago because these restrictions were heightening back up again, and I was a bit frustrated and upset, and I just said, I need to remind myself, you know, God's people are not concerned. Well, not that we shouldn't be concerned, but we have a hope that is beyond this physical realm. And I was going through this book. I just happened to start reading the First and Second Peter in the Bible. I thought, this is fantastic. This is exactly what I needed to read. And I started going through the booklet. And that booklet was written in 2006. And you could pick that booklet up and it's written like, you know, it was published just a couple of weeks ago. That's how current God's truth is. That's how relevant it is at all times in our lives. God's truth is always up to date. And the part that I really want to emphasize here is guarding your hope, getting hold of the right hope and guarding it, not letting anything take that away from you. And God's people are keeping the Feast of Tabernacles right now. And if you're someone that's not attending, I'd really encourage you to start reading the literature on the Trumpet website, to get into the Trumpet magazine, to act on the words that you hear, so that you can get this hope, so that you can grab hold of this hope that God wants to give to you, and then guard it in this chaotic world. Mr. Fleury writes here, Peter, this is the Apostle Peter, was about to be martyred when he wrote his epistles. Then he was the epitome of hope. What a turnaround. Few, if any, of Christ's disciples have ever had more hope. His message is needed more today than at any time in the history of man. Peter's betrayal brought terrible shame on him. Think you will ever make it without God's Holy Spirit in you? Look at Peter. There is an important lesson here. No matter how hopeless you may think it is, wait on Christ and he will turn it around. God's hope never dies. It's always there for us, if we want it. But we must be patient to find that hope. There is no such thing as hopelessness with God. In the depths of Peter's despair, he found a living hope, and so can you. Peter was about to be martyred, and he had that tremendous hope. And I know that we're going through a lot of unusual restrictions, a lot of difficulties, but think about this hope. Think about this message. I don't think anybody is being martyred right now for anything. Think about the hope that we should have. And it goes well beyond, you know, these physical nations and the temporary successes that we may see in the United States and Britain. Mr. Fleury says, if our mind is just on the things of this world, we will become mired in depression, stress, and discouragement. That is not how God thinks. If we were perfect, we wouldn't have those negative emotions. But of course, we aren't. We struggle with doubts. He says, the world's problems are real, but this hope is more real. This hope fills us with joyful anticipation and expectation. We anticipate and expect the most hope-filled future that our minds can imagine. If we lose focus on our commission, our hope will vanish. We must have hope in order to function in a hopeless world. I apologize for reading a lot here, but I think it's just a lot more impactful to hear these quotes than to hear me commenting on it. But he says, we must have hope in order to function. We have to live in this world. We have to function in this hopeless world, and we need this hope. If ever there was a time when we needed this hope, it is now. We are seeing Bible prophecy. The year 2020 has been a year like no other in terms of Bible prophecy. Mr. Fleury writes, Satan is far more wrathful today than when Herbert W. Armstrong was alive because his time is so short. This age is worse, more dangerous. The devil is working on the moods, attitudes, and feelings of mankind as never before. The world is becoming increasingly unpredictable. God's church is going to face unusual problems. I would say that this has been a year of unusual problems. Knowing that Satan has been cast down and is feverishly laboring to attack us, we can be sure of that fact. He looks for every opportunity to attack. Since we, the God's church, are his number one target, we must prepare ourselves. All of God's people must understand that we are entering extremely trying times. What we have faced to this point is minor compared to what we are about to experience, but God always prepares us for such circumstances. He goes on, Like Peter, we can face severe persecution, even death, and still be filled with hope. We must have this hope to face the worst crisis ever on planet Earth. As you watch television, you need to ask yourself, is this preparing me for the coming persecution? Is my hope strong enough to endure the future? Do you think that when you look at these restrictions and we obey the laws of man as we should, and we comply with those things, but do you see, you know, what's beyond that? Do you see this chaos, the fighting in the United States? Are you mentally preparing for what is ahead? I think one thing that 2020 has really hit me hard is we're not just seeing the news on the TV or reading about it on the computer. You see it when you walk into the store. You see it on your front lawn. These events are having an impact on every single human being. Mr. Fleury says, is my hope strong enough to endure the future? We must use our time wisely. It takes time to build hope. He says, there is a cause for hope and joy and a cause for depression and discouragement. We must search deeply into God's word because within it there is boundless hope. People in this world are living in the most hopeless times ever. God wants us to be giving the world living hope. Do we continue to smile? Do we continue to be cheerful? Do we radiate that hope? That's what he writes about later on in this booklet. He says our articles, our content must radiate or hope. Living hope must radiate from our television program. It must saturate our publications. He says Peter set a marvelous example of wrapping his life and everything he did in the hope of God. These are action words. He wrapped his life in the hope of God. It influenced his conduct. It changed his conduct, having that hope. Mr. Fleury writes, if we look to God the Father in Christ, our hope never dies. Nothing can steal it, though we do have to guard it. No trial or tribulation can quench our hope if we guard it. He says, Satan, who is totally hopeless, is a master at destroying people's hope. Peter says that if you understand that hope, you will guard it with your life. You won't let anyone steal it from you. Study Peter's epistles to see how to build that hope and guard it. He quotes from 1 Peter 1 and verse 13 in the Revised Standard Version. It says, set your hope fully upon the grace that is coming to you and the revelation of Jesus Christ. Set your hope. Verse 15, it says, but as he which has called you is holy, so be you holy in all manner of conduct. Now, I didn't get into a lot of what that hope is. And that's why I would encourage you to read these, or that's why I encourage you to read this booklet, why I encourage you to read, obviously, the content on thetrumpet.com, to wrap yourself in God's way of life, to wrap yourself in that hope. These are trying times, but it's really nothing compared to what's coming ahead in the next year or two or three, 5 or 10, I don't know. But Bible prophecy says it's going to get a lot worse, and we need to set our hope. We need to guard our hope. Get that hope, grab hold of it, and do not let it go. Again, read Mr. Gerald Fleury's booklet, The Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope. That's all I have time for on today's show. I'd like to thank you for listening to the program. Mr. Stephen Fleury should be back for tomorrow's show. If you have any comments or questions, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks again for listening.